picture in my head of a place. Home. A woman. I don't know if any of it's real. But it has a feeling. And the feeling's real.
Today, we're going to blow your mind. Today, we're going to talk about this movie on Amazon called Bliss. Due to high popular demand, everyone's asking me about it. They say, oh my God, Isaac, you got to watch Bliss. So I did. I watched Bliss, and I see all the symbolism, all the themes. Of course, we've got simulation theory, but more importantly, we've got Gnosticism. We're going to break down the whole thing, the symbolism, what is going on in this film, like you've never seen anywhere else. No one else is covering it like this, I assure you. We're going to talk about the Pleiades and Helena Blavatsky and the tortoises. Oh my God, the turtles, they go all the way down. Platonic solids. You want to get smart and nerdy? You want to get occult nerdy? Well, we're going to do it today. Because we're leaving Plato's cave. And we're going to approach Corone Zone. We're going to do the ritual of Chud and see what created this universe. And some people like Bill Nye are going to join us, and Salma Hayek and Owen Wilson. It's a weird movie, right? And maybe you're new to the show. Maybe you're unfamiliar with these ideas. I will try to be gentle because I'm sure several listeners are just stumbling upon this podcast and they're not ready. They're not ready for the hidden truth, the occult wisdom, and what I will present on this episode. And as you know, when I do a film analysis, I give you up front. You're getting plot spoilers, so get ready for that. And then I tell you, is it worth it? Is it worth your time to watch this movie? I give it a soft yes. It was pretty good. Wasn't my favorite movie, but it was good. It was different, right? I liked it. Maybe not for everybody. Mrs. Weishaupt didn't enjoy it. She tapped out early. So she didn't really get to the whole idea of what the simulation theory is about. I don't know if you're listening to the interviews. I interviewed Mrs. Weishaupt, and it's only available on my Rockfin exclusive show, Inside the Mind of a Conspiracy Theorist, Part 1 and Part 2. And we go deep into my mind. But yeah, she couldn't hang. She wasn't into it. So it's not for everybody, right? But it was good. It certainly was no Matrix. The themes are the same. Simulation theory. Questioning reality. Who's in it? Salma Hayek. Owen Wilson. Bill Nye, the science guy. And the movie, if you want to compare it to other films in the similar genre of... I would call this a romantic science fiction kind of movie. It's kind of in the ballpark of Vanilla Sky, which features the second greatest actor of all time, Tom Cruise. But let's get into it. The film starts off. We're introduced to the character Owen Wilson plays called Greg. Very normal name. And he's in his office at work. He's sketching. He's drawing images from his mind. And he's talking about what's real. What is real? And this comes up much later. He's one hell of an artist, by the way. But what he's doing is he's drawing images from his mind. Mental emanations of the mind. This is the Kabbalistic idea of God. Mentally projecting reality, which man can do through the Hermetic axiom, as above, so below. Man can become the ritual magician. And Greg here, he is the occult magician because, as we'll find out, he's projecting his will and he will manifest his own reality. But we're not getting too deep into that yet. Let's get into the story before we go hard in the paint. But yeah, Greg, he's daydreaming. He's like a manager at some, customer service type office. And then we hear about how he's taking medications for some shoulder and knee pain. And it's referencing hydrocodone. There's a medication bottle in the shot. and the camera does some fun tricks that it shows a clear emphasis on this. And again, and I'm going to have a lot of screenshots here. I always tell you, like and subscribe on the Instagram at Isaac Weishaupt, and I will, this might encompass two different posts because I've got a lot of images that we'll discuss here on this show. So like and subscribe, link in the show notes, Instagram at Isaac Weishaupt. The community is growing large and out of control. But he's got this bottle of hydrocodone, and you see the medication in the bottle the whole time. And there's a whole scene right at the beginning of him trying to refill it while his boss is summoning him. And you always got to watch the beginning and ends of these types of films because they show you, they lay out different ideas very clearly, but the first time you watch it, it doesn't really make sense because you're still trying to familiarize with the new territory. But he's trying to get a refill. The automated call response that he's calling, ironically speaking Spanish, sounds just like Selma Hayek, by the way, who plays the character of Isabel in the film. We'll be introduced to her soon, so you just hold tight. And we confirm that he's out of refills. He's refilled it 5 times. Which, you know, if you want to get crazy, law of fives, Discordianism, that kind of thing, number 23. But that doesn't really play a role, so we're not going to get crazy with it. But he's got 5 refills and he's out. He's taking too many pills. That's our first clue. He's addicted to pills. And then you see him crushing it up and he's snorting it. But as it goes through the sequence of him snorting his final pills, we see across the street through the window of his office, Safe Harbor Rehab. And if you take notice and look at the photo that I will upload to Instagram there, it's got a lighthouse as the logo. And the lighthouse is something we cover many times on this show. It's the phallic symbol rooted in the earth. It's the guiding path. We've seen this in such great films like Annihilation and The Lighthouse. The path to enlightenment. And I don't know if you caught my film analysis of The Witch and The Lighthouse. And I argued that what we were witnessing was a feminine versus masculine element there, with the lighthouse being the phallic portion of that. They were two of my favorite shows. I believe it was March of 2020 I released those. But you can learn more about The Lighthouse on that one, or my show on Annihilation, one of the greatest movies of all time. However, in this story, I would argue that The Lighthouse represents Jesus Christ himself, yes. It represents his path for the followers. Jesus said, I am the light of the world. He who follows me will not walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. And his disciples also carried the light. But we'll come back to that again. Put a pin in that one too. And you'll notice, if you pay attention, they give you the prescription number, 897-978-4455-90112. Put a pin in that. Next, he goes into this boss's office, and the boss is like bitching at him, like, oh, your productivity or whatever. And you'll see in the background on the image that I captured, he has a poster that says, beware of robots. Another hint. Yes, his boss is saying the nerds are going to kill us. Yes, the nerds are going to kill us. It's true. But Greg, he gets fired because he's dicking off at work. He's drawing pictures. And his boss says to him, this is the beginning of your new life. It's the call to action in the hero's journey. Joseph Campbell, hero's journey, like Star Wars, like I wrote about in the Star Wars conspiracy book. Says, this is the beginning of your new life. And you could look at this two ways, because there's two parallel themes in this movie. There's this drug addiction idea, and then there's the Gnosticism idea. Gnosticism is more of my forte, so we will heavily focus on that. But if you want to look at the drug addiction side of the house, you could say that, well, this is his new life. The boss is forcing him towards the rock bottom by firing him. He's not going to enable his addictive behavior and provide a place of employment. But Greg, he's all tweaked out or whatever. I don't know. I don't do drugs. I don't know. What does hydrocodone do to you? I don't know if it tweaks you out, numbs you out. I don't know what it does. Anyway, he gets up too quickly, and he accidentally kills his boss. He bashes his skull on the desk on accident, but he gets out of there. And then he goes to the bar across the street, and this is where we're introduced to Salma Hayek's character, Isabel, and she's, like, mentally projecting different events. She's making the server drop the plates. She makes the boss that Greg just killed fall out the window so it looks like he suicided himself, like Epstein. And and then what you hear in that scene is there's a speech about how the world is malleable. Again, emanations of thought, Kabbalistic thinking, ritual magician type stuff. And she's saying how Greg is a real person. And we confirm that Sophia... And that'll make sense later. But she's saying that she knows that he's real and everyone else is fake. Because Isabel is the Sophia in Gnosticism. She is the all-knowing wisdom. And she knows everything about Greg. She knows how he accidentally killed his boss. She actually feels responsible for his situation because she literally created this world. What does that mean? Well, we're going to find out. She says, oh, my ex-boyfriend's a real asshole. He's got this necklace that I need, and, you know, he's one of the other real people, just like Greg. Meanwhile, everything and everyone else is fake, and, you know, she has him go get some crystals. She shows him how these crystals give you superpowers to control reality.
I don't recognize you.
I don't know you.
It's always blurry at first. I'm Isabel. Come sit with me.
I'm fine. I'm just gonna have my drink. Thank you.
You need an alibi, don't you?
What?
Interesting view. Your next step is extremely important. You do not want to spend this life in prison. That would be very, very bad. Look at me. I am going to help you because personally I feel a little bit responsible for your situation.
Why do you feel responsible?
Let's just say it's kind of my fault this world exists. Worry about it. It's gonna be okay. I'm gonna fix it. But first you need to do something for me. I have a boyfriend, an ex. He's a real asshole, and he's in the bathroom.
Okay.
He has something that belongs to me. Are you even listening to me?
Yes. About your boyfriend.
Ex. He has my amulet necklace, and I need it back.
Why can't you use your powers on your boyfriend?
Because he's real, like you and I.
You keep saying real. What do you mean by real?
You see all these people outside? They're not real. The bartender? Not real. Nothing of this is real. There's very few of us.
I think you need help.
No, you need help. Get me my necklace, and I will fix the problem for you, Greg.
How do you know my name?
I took it from your mind. I'm just kidding. The bartender just said it like a minute ago. Come on, Greg. What have you got to lose?
Why is this necklace so important?
It contains special yellow crystals. With the power to manipulate this fake world. Well done. That was fast. Did he give you any trouble?
No, he was just passed out.
Really? Great. Get back in there and get the wallet. Drinks on him.
No, I think I got money.
He owes me. Okay, guapo. Time to solve your problem. You deserve a clean break.
Okay. I'm gonna fix it. See this? The world is simply light bouncing around your neurons. It's manufactured and malleable. You are free.
Now this this all-knowing Sophia plays the most important role in this tale, and we'll revisit this, of course. Next, Greg. He's watching his phone. He's watching a video of his estranged daughter, Emily. She's like the third sort of, kind of a minor but major character at the same time. And on this video, as a young girl, she's wearing a shirt with a turtle on it. I'm going to tell you to get another pin out and put another pin in this thought. The turtle is very important. Then Isabel takes the phone. She's like, no, these kids, they're fake too. Your kids are fake. That girl doesn't exist. We're going to pawn this phone. And she's saying to him, she's trying to remind him of the higher order, a world that exists beyond the prison planet. Now, in Gnosticism, you've got this. That's the main idea of Gnosticism, is that Sophia, the wisdom, she accidentally created, without the permission of her male consort, she accidentally created the Yaldabaoth, which became a false god who made this false reality. And Sophia is supposed to come to Earth and tell man about, well, you know, see, the world you live in, there's a false god. The Christian god's a false god, and what you really need to do is focus on making contact with the higher realm above this false god and this false prison planet you live in. Up in the Pleroma, where the invisible spirit dwells. This is the real God. And she's trying to remind Greg that this is the truth. She's like, look, we know this exists. We're just not entirely sure. Because in the occult, they say that learning is a process of remembering. We all kind of know. Just like in the Matrix, and Morpheus explains it to Neo. It's the same thing. You can't quite put your finger on it, but you know something is off. So she takes Greg to her tent. And again, I'll put, again, images all over the Instagram for all this stuff. The turtle shirt and this next scene. But she takes Greg back to her tent because she's homeless, right? But she's not like, you know, shitting in buckets homeless. She's like bohemian, you know, voodoo skulls and a massive tent homeless. Like, it's kind of a fun homeless. And you'll see the stencil of a diamond that appears throughout the film. That's the platonic solid. We'll cover that later. She's more like a Stevie Nicks homeless, okay? Like, she's still kind of hot, you know? Meanwhile, Greg, he's instantly homeless as all hell within 5 minutes. He's like dingy homeless, quick. So they're in the tent. She tells him, look, you have to observe this feeling you have, this attachment, and you have to let it go. Because right now he's attached to the shame involved with killing his boss. He feels bad about this. This is a very Buddhist idea. This fits into the Gnosticism, the consideration that the idea that life is suffering when we don't accept reality. People sometimes confuse these ideas. Like the Buddhists, they subscribe to you know, people think they subscribe to prison planet Gnosticism, but the ideas that I've come across is that our attachment to how reality should look is what causes the suffering, not the actual prison planet. But I'm no theologian, don't ask me. Anyhow, she shows him how to light candles with his thoughts. She's like, look, I got these powers, I got the CDs through the yellow crystals that we're huffing. And at this point, he shows her his drawings, and comments on how accurate they are, and he says it feels real in his mind. He can see it. And she's like, yes, this is our real life outside of here. Because again, it's the process of learning is a process of remembering. And she's like, yes, you got it, Greg. That's right. That's right. There's a higher existence, a higher plane, a higher dimension beyond this world that you know of. So they take a little bit more yellow crystal. And through the power of thought, they can manifest different realities. They start tripping people up at a skate rink. And this is just like Aleister Crowley tried to teach William Seabrook when they were walking down the sidewalk. And Aleister Crowley was like, look, I'll make this guy trip through the power of mental thought, mental projections. And William Seabrook, the guy who wrote the first like zombie cannibalistic book, was like, nah, bro, you can't do that. So through sympathetic magic, Aleister Crowley sort of limped. And then next thing you know, the guy in front of them, he starts limping. My God. So it's kind of like what they do in the skate rink. And you hear Isabel tell Greg, none of this matters. Look, we're making old people fall down at the rink. It doesn't matter because they're not real. It's all simulation. Then it gets kind of weird. They sort of watch themselves get arrested as they walk away. It's like the dimensions are slipping over one another. And they're running out of yellow crystal drugs. So they need to go find their dealer. And his name is Kendo. So they can refill their little amulet with the yellow crystals. Meanwhile, Emily, she's looking for her dad. She knows he's on drugs. So does her brother. They've given up on him a little bit. They go into the shelter, the safe harbor rehab. And you'll see posters on the wall of the 1%. And the woman even tells Emily, like, hey, we're protesting inequality. And if you recall, if you're watching at the beginning of the film, there's this ruckus on the news about the protest and the 1%. This is another recurring theme. You got the drugs, you got the Gnosticism, and you got the elites. Again, photos on the Instagram. Then Greg and Isabel, they're hungry. So they go over to the fast food restaurant. The fast food restaurant is called Doc Henry's. And Doc Henry's has a mascot of a cartoon turtle. Remember that pin I said to put in of the turtle? Because I told you Emily, the daughter, had a shirt with a turtle on it. Well, now there's a fast food restaurant called Doc Henry's with a turtle as the mascot. So put that in that pin also. Note that almost the entire film occurs within one block of this Safe Harbor rehab, by the way. You'll see it in the background of many shots. I believe this is the church. This represents the church, okay? Because Greg is kind of like the Jesus Christ character. Which I'll explain later. So, Isabel, she walks across the street. And, you know, we'll see XO symbolism if you want to get crazy about the Mark of the Beast stuff. We talked about XO with my Super Bowl show about The Weeknd and his Illuminate confirmedness. We won't rehash that too hard because it doesn't play a big role here. But you do see it. It's on the set. And Isabel, she's going to find Kendo. She wants to get her little yellow crystal dope. And again, you see the diamond stencils. The diamond is the yellow crystal. Okay. And when she's in the drug in Kendo's crib there, the news is playing. And again, you hear the news. It's talking about people getting government handouts. This is typical news cycle stuff here, okay? You know, because you got like, it's like a right-wing thing. Like, oh my God, these people getting their handouts, these losers. So again, we've got another reference to this elite, the 1% versus the 99%. Because this film, as you will find out, is a story about the golden age for the elites. When they break free from the Gnostic matrix and create their own matrix for us. That's right. I said it. Now here we find out, okay, we find out why Greg looks super duper homeless. It's because time slipped much faster for him than what we thought, because his daughter Emily finds him standing out in the street corner waiting for Isabel to get her dope. And she's like, hey, you didn't make it to the graduation. And he was like, oh, yeah, I'm going. And she's like, Dad, that was 2 weeks ago. So time has morphed a little bit. Again, because he's on drugs. So Isabel, she catches up to Greg. She's like, look, quit pretending you're talking to your daughter. She isn't real. She's fake. She's fake news. And he pushes back a little bit. He's like, no, she's real. And she's like, no, she's not. And this is, again, the recurring theme of this film. Greg has this choice of joining the Golden Age elites versus his own flesh and blood, whom Isabel asserts is an illusion. Now the next day, Isabel, she's at her homeless tent home in the Stevie Nicks home under the bridge there, under the overpass. And if you look closely like a psychopath, like I did for you, you'll see newspaper clippings on this little corkboard. And if you pay real close attention, you'll see a headline buried in there that says Breakthrough in Simulation Theory. Again, you got to see that one. Instagram at Isaac Weishaupt. Again, because this is the role. This is a story about the golden age for the elites breaking from the simulation theory. Don't believe me? Look at the news. The Silicon Valley billionaire nerds, they've been financing and funneling money to solve an algorithm of the simulation so that when the headline says on the film that this is what happened, yes, the one percenters, the elites, have in fact broken from the Matrix. So Isabel, and that's, you know, they don't talk about it. It's just, it's there if you look for it, as I did and got the screenshot for you. Because you know what? You and I are in this together. Now Isabel, she starts fighting with Greg. She's like, you need to see what's going on here. You need to see my belief in the world. It's a simulation. And she says that he's getting sucked into the illusion world, and she knows it's not real. And she's like, look, you're my soulmate. We are connected.
I don't understand.
I didn't see her.
I'm really worried about you, Greg. I'm really worried about you. You're getting sucked into the illusion and you're dragging me in with you. I know this is not real. I can barely breathe and my stomach is turning and my skin hurts and I feel like I'm drowning. And I know this is not real. You are getting seduced by the simulation and I'm losing you.
I think maybe we should just stop hanging out.
You're my soulmate. You can't just walk away and think that you can disconnect from me. If you could see the difference between what's real and what's illusion, you'd know that, and you're supposed to know that by now.
How am I supposed to know? You're the one telling me he's real and she's not real, and then I have to take your word for it, right? That's really your trick, is it forces me to depend on you. No. It's very clever. It makes me believe in you. But guess what? I don't believe in you. I've never believed in you. How could someone believe you? Tell me something that makes me believe in you. Show me something.
Okay, I get it.
Now, in Gnosticism, there is an idea that the real God created perfected pairs. Or consorted mates of male and female. So maybe this is the soulmate concept. She mentioned soulmates, and in the occult history, they believe the first time two people fell in love as soulmates was when Dante fell in love with Beatrice in 1274. Now, if you, and look, and Greg, he's like, I don't believe your simulation nonsense. And she's like, well, I'm going to show you. I'm going to make you snort 10 blue crystals, and you're going to eject out of this fake simulation world, and then I'm going to show you. So he puts the device up his nose, like it's a COVID nasal swab. That's the way out, I guess, to eject the simulation. Oh, and by the way, again, if you're a real psychopath like me, you're watching real close, and she gets these blue crystals. They're special. She gets them out of the safe in her Stevie Nicks homeless tent village. She's got a nice powered safe. Don't ask. She punches in the code 897-978. Well, that's the same code as the prescription for the hydrocodone. So again, a little bit of a, you know, a layover between those two storylines. So he takes the nose pills and boom, he wakes up. He's in this new world, sort of. And they're all sitting in a circle in some chairs and they're plugged into the theoretical brain in a vat experiment of philosophy of Descartes ideas. There's a glass cube with brains and vats. This is just like the Matrix, right? And there's a guy working in the lab and he sort of wakes up Isabel and Greg and asks Isabel how the world was. And she said, well, it's not war or poverty, but it's just icky. And this is what the Gnostics believe our world is. It is a prison planet. It is icky. It's a mess because the imperfect god Yaldabaoth created it. The fake god. The fake god of Christianity, of the Abrahamic religions, who tricked us into worshiping him, who tricks us into having carnal desires for one another and having sexy time and making more souls to feed to Yaldabaoth, to trap into our prison planet. That was some of the early thoughts about why sex was bad, by the way. Because you're feeding into this system, the prison planet. That's why they say, look, like that's why the Christians and the Muslims and all these religions, they always tell you to pump out tons of kids. You shouldn't have sex for fun. You should have sex for procreation. And all that's doing is fueling up this big simulation for the crazy Yaldabaoth god that's a jealous, angry god, and all he wants is for everyone to worship him. So anyhow, they're out of the simulation, apparently. They blasted through with the 10 blue crystals. They actually only had 8, which comes up later. But the world they're in now, it's, you know, it's beautiful, sunny, great architecture. Greg's like, oh, this is overwhelmingly great. Looks like Greece, I would assume. Or some Mediterranean town. And it's curious because it's in a parallel world. You'll see a street vendor toss a peach over to Greg. And what happened in the ugly world, in the simulation world, was that a homeless guy tosses a beer in the same exact fashion. They take note of a hotel, the Hotel Pleiades, which was what Greg was drawing in his office before he got fired. And the Hotel Pleiades has an observatory attached to it as well. And Greg and Isabel, they live in this beautiful home. There's a robot prepping their food. It's the golden age. It's the golden age for the elites that could jack out of the simulation. Now Greg, he's like, wow. You know, Owen Wilson, he's wow. Because the town, their home, it's beautiful. And she reveals to him, like, hey, it wasn't always like this. And he's like, well, how did this come to be? How did this world happen? And Isabel's like, it used to not be this way. We used to drop dead from pollution and all these terrible things happened. But then 3 advancements in science came along. Science changed the world. And she talks about, you'll hear about this asteroid mining guy who gave all the money that anyone ever needed out. And this guy, it turns out, is Doc Henry, the fast food guy with the turtle. And she describes this golden age where the robots do all the work and humans can actually do anything they want.
How did this whole world come to be?
Your memory's not back.
No. Is that bad?
I was so scared to lose you. I made a irresponsible and stupid decision. We shouldn't have exited like that without the appropriate dosage. And maybe it might not come back.
Who cares? I love not remembering this place because I get to discover it all again. I'm walking around just like a newborn, experiencing all of this beauty. For the first time, I just want to know, where did it come from? Has it always been like this?
No. This place was actually much worse than the one we just exited. It got so bad. I mean, pollution was to a degree that people would just drop dead on the street, the level of poverty. poverty was insufferable.
Looking at this, I can't picture that. I mean, what happened?
Three things.
Just three things?
Yeah, and you guess?
No.
Oh, come on.
I don't know.
Automation, synthetic biology, and asteroid mining.
I wasn't gonna guess that.
I'm gonna get your memory back. I'm gonna trigger that memory. You're coming back. Watch this.
I'm scared.
Yes! Ta-da! The thought visualizer! You don't remember your baby? This is your invention.
I invented that?
Oh, it's like super popular. Very small circles. Give it a try.
What is it?
A thought visualizer.
Okay, I don't know what that
is. Okay, introduce yourself.
Hello, I'm Greg Whittle.
Strawberries. A dinosaur swimming in the ocean. A cheetah chasing a gazelle. A volcano.
Oh, my favorite one. Do my favorite one. Say, we're in a pickle.
We're in a pickle.
I love it. But you know what? This is not just a toy. It's amazing for illustrating things. Sit up straight and pay attention, Dr. Whittle. Science saved the world. Synthetic biology fixed all the environmental problems. And asteroid mining brought mountains of new money. And the guy that had the company for the asteroid mining.
That guy?
Yeah, he just started giving all this free money away. I mean, every single person here gets a base of 500,000K a year. And of course, then the robots, they started doing all the boring and tedious tasks. We got the freedom and the time to explore our passions, science, art, whatever you wanted. We went from a broken world to a beautiful, sustainable, safe, peaceful Earth. You have to admit, this is spectacular.
Yes.
But you know what?
What?
The thing is that it's amazing how easy humans can get used to even something spectacular.
Now, this is one of the most fascinating parts of the story. Because, you know, it has echoes of the Great Reset talk. Or, if you've ever read Buckminster Fuller's ideas of the nonsense of earning a living, and I would advise you to read that if you haven't, you're in for a treat. Back in the 70s, he wrote this, and he argued that technology is an opportunity for mankind to live however he wants. Because he's like, look, we can stop inventing and making up jobs that aren't necessary. Get rid of the middle managers. It's a waste. It's wasteful, it's unsatisfying, it's low paying, it destroys the environment, all these things. We basically, as a society, invent jobs to support the lie that everyone must be employed in some form of drudgery. Man is required to justify his existence by adding value to shareholder portfolios. And ironically, the shareholder or the company has zero requirement to repay the favor. It is literally slavery. And that's exactly what Isabel is talking about in that clip. I'm going to read you from an article from openculture.com on Buckminster Fuller's theory here. He says, the true business of people should be to go back to school and think about whatever it was they were thinking about before somebody came along and told them they had to earn a living. against the specious notion that everyone should have to make a wage to live. This nonsense of earning a living, he takes a more magnanimous view. And then he says, quote, "It is a fact today that 1 in 10,000 of us can make a technological breakthrough capable of supporting all the rest, who then may go on to make millions of small breakthroughs of their own." And AOC, you know AOC, she even rehashed this idea. Because humans, they're scared of automation. They're scared they'll lose their jobs. They're scared they will lose their identity. Because the Matrix wants to keep you locked in to your identity through employment. That's the only thing you're worth to this world. And I'm here to tell you that's not the truth. The truth is you are a creative artist. And your potential is infinite. But they want you to think like, oh, I'm just a slave to the man and I'll just do this for 40 years, then I'll retire and then I'll die. So that Buckminster Fuller idea is very interesting. And then it's also interesting that in the story, Doc Henry, the turtle guy who mined the asteroid and found a way to give everyone all the money they could ever want, fast food restaurants are generally, you know, the opposite end. They're opposite of communism. They're generally, and this is a generalization, and it's not 100%, they're generally owned by the right-winger types, you know? So it's curious that this flips on its head, and it's sort of the communist guy who owns the fast food thing that gives out the universal basic income, you know? But we're not going to get into politics. No, no, we're going to keep going with the movie. Because on that diatribe she provided, which I think is the most interesting part of the story, she starts it out by saying science saved the world. And she talks about synthetic biology fixing our environment. That's transhumanism. And if you watch it, again, I'll put the photo up on the Instagram, you'll see an actual strand of damaged DNA being replaced with a synthetic one. It's transhumanism. And she talks about the asteroid mining and all the value of Doc Henry, the fast food turtle guy. And on the screen, you'll see aliens and Saturn. Because Saturn plays a role in this too, as you will hear in the conclusion. She says, "We went from a broken world to a beautiful, sustainable, safe, peaceful Earth." And she says, you know, some people say ignorance is bliss. And she's saying that the Golden Age inhabitants, the elites, the 1%, they would rather just forget the old ugly world. But then she says she created the ugly world. She says, "I created this ugly world to remind people about the real ugly world that we came from so they can appreciate the Golden Age." And we get the full scope of what she's doing. She's saying you have to experience the bad to appreciate the good. Right? She created the simulation world, the fake ugly world, for the people living in the Golden Age to remind them that it wasn't always this way. Again, the process of remembering is the process of learning. Everything experienced in history lives on in the eternal cosmic mind. So she's like, look, we got to get plugged back into the brain vats. But Greg's like, nope. And he uses interesting language to talk about how much he wants to stay in the Golden Age. He's like, look, I already took a bite of this apple. And he says it a couple times. And this is, of course, the Gnostic tale, the serpent in the Garden of Eden, the Gnostic story that the serpent showed Adam and Eve the knowledge through the forbidden fruit that God was a false God.
I'm sitting here. I couldn't be more. I couldn't be more grateful.
Greg.
Let's go for a swim.
We can't.
Yes, we can.
No, we have to go back.
No.
No, we have to go back to the lab.
We will, in a little bit. Come on.
No, I have to take this very seriously.
I know, I'm taking it seriously too, but you can't just give me a bite of an apple and then show it and then take it away. Give me another couple bites.
I already exited before it was over because of you.
Listen. We are going to go back. We're just going to just crunch into this apple for a few more days and then I'm going back.
So he wants to stay in the fantasy world at the Hotel Pleiades. Very interesting idea here. And we'll get back to that, because it plays a role for the Turtles. But he meets Bill Nye the Science Guy, who's an actor now, apparently, right? Good fit for him. And in this Golden Age town, there's holographic comedians, and they're making interesting jokes about how hell can't be that bad. Because, again, the Gnostics are the inversion idea. They think that heaven is hell and heaven and hell is heaven.
Oh, wow. Now I'm impressed.
Maybe, just maybe, hell is not such a horrible place. Whenever I hear about, oh, my God, boiling oil in hell, my first association is wild partying, barbecue, sexual orgies, alcohol, and so on and so on. What if this is the real life in hell? And what if in hell, from time to time, some devil's representative comes to the people having a good time there and tells them, listen, guys, now we will be for a quarter of an hour observed by heaven. So please pretend that you suffer.
So Bill Nye, he whispers over to Greg, he's like, look, I think Isabel's research is flawed. A very sort of white rabbit comment. And in some ways, Greg, I argue, is the Christ character. Isabel is the Sophia character. She created the ugly simulation world. And Bill Nye, he comes through to tell Greg that, look, you need to be the messenger. And there's a true heaven above the ugly world, and you need to go down to the ugly world, the simulation world, and tell them. And Sophia, she really screwed up when she created that thing. Well, another interesting part, another holographic woman in the story in the Golden Age world, she's giving a tale to the crowd, and you barely hear this. Again, you got to be a real weirdo like me and sort of follow all the little ins and outs. And she's talking about how the universe is a tortoise sitting on a tortoise sitting on a tortoise. She says, it's turtles all the way down.
My grandmother used to say, the universe is sitting on the back of a tortoise. And I would ask Granny, what is that tortoise standing on? She replied with quite confidence, another tortoise. And that one stands on another tortoise. And that one, another tortoise. It turns out, it's turtles all the way down.
So you know what? I think it's turtle time. Let's talk about it. Let's rehash what we've talked about in the past on the turtles. I talked to Professor Dana Pasulka about her book, American Cosmic, because it plays a role in the aliens and the UFOs and the quantum and all that stuff. And I'm going to read you a short paragraph that she confirmed to me in our show in summer 2020 that this is very relevant and very important to the tale. She says, Tyler told me in the book, says, Tyler told me an anecdote that demonstrates the artifact's sacred significance to him and to many of the scientist believers. And she's referring to an artifact meaning a piece of a UFO, basically. Tyler had put the part in a backpack and had then stopped in to see a friend. He and his friend visited and dined, and then Tyler left to continue his travels. The next day, he received a message from his friend. I had a dream about the contents of your backpack. I dreamt that there was a separate universe that you carried in it. A universe that was created within this universe, that who knows where this universe was created, had very much the essence of turtles all the way down. Ha. That's almost verbatim what you hear in Bliss. We talked about this. I did a few analysis on the film and the story It with Matterin, the turtle that exists in the macroverse and created the universe, right? Ring a bell? And you see the turtles in the It films and the symbolism, just like you see it in Bliss. And in the book, it happens during the Ritual of Chud, which is the final battle with Spider It in the 1950s, part of the story. But you hear that It is an eternal energy manifested from Matterin, from the turtle. And when Bill is in the Ritual of Chud, he sees what he calls the final other. That was the creator of the turtle. And the final other and the Matterin stood by and watched as it devoured everything. And there's, you know, there's ties into the idea of going into the abyss and coming across Corone Zone, the guardian of the abyss, and destroying the ego, Aleister Crowley type stuff. And what was curious is that if you look in Thelemapedia, I'm going to read you from it. It says, Corone Zone first appeared in the Enochian writings of John Dee in the 16th century, where he was synonymous with the serpent in the Garden of Eden. And John Dee described Corone Zone as the first and deadliest of all the powers of evil. Rightly so, for although he is not a person, he is the metaphysical contrary of the whole process of magic. Now, not so ironically, Professor Diana Pasalka is writing a book about, drumroll please, John Dee. Do you see how all these things are connected? That's why when I wrote the Alien book, Aliens, UFOs, and the Occult, Use Your Illusion 1, we go into all the occult connections, because that is what it's all about. And now I'm going to come back to the turtle one more time before this show is over, because it ties into Helena Blavatsky. Now, Isabel, she believes that, is there a song, is it Garbage? I sing, there's a lyric, Isabel in Hell. No, it's Evil Johnny, Angry Johnny. Who sings that? You know what I'm saying. Isabel in Hell. Anyway, Isabel, she believes that access to the brain box is a human right. And Greg is like, yeah, I agree with you. Publish your research. I'm not going back in. It's so ugly, I do not want to go back in there. And she's like, yeah. That's what this contrast is, what you need to appreciate the world you live in. Now, at this point, Greg, he's only got remnants of memories of his daughter in the ugly world, in the simulation world. It's a hologram that appears to him because the dimensions are slipping. Because remember, they only took 8 blue crystals. They needed 10. And Isabel, she says, look, these remnants, that's the side effects from the brain box world because we didn't get enough blue crystals. But Emily, the daughter, she wants him to choose the ugly world, the brain box world, the simulation world, because to her, it is real, even though Isabel says it is not. Then things get weird. The worlds really blur together and, you know, they decide, look, we got to go back in the brain box. We got to get all 10 blues, because otherwise these dimensions will slip together. And again, you see the turtle cartoon as chaos is unloading in this golden age world, you'll see the turtle manifesting, popping in and out. Again, I got the photo on the Instagram. But they're back in the ugly world. They're doing their, homeless drug addict things. They seem crazy at this point. And this time, you'll see Greg, he's like, again, everything's within the same block of the Safe Harbor Rehab, the church. He's across from his workplace, and he comes out of the bar, and we find out that the bar is named Plato's Dive. Again, a reference to Plato's Cave and a reference to the Matrix and the simulation world and the Gnostic world. And what's curious here is that Plato, he obviously came up with the term Platonic solids, and it was the idea that the cube represents the Earth. The Saturnian cube represents the Earth, the Saturn that you saw in the cartoon when Doc Harris was drilling on the asteroid that changed the world. And you saw Saturn in there. But Plato said the cube represents the Earth. It's the building block of the material world, the evil world, of course. And Platonic solids are the three-dimensional shapes. So instead of a square, you'll get a cube. Instead of a triangle, you'll get a pyramid. It's like infusing earth, air, water, and fire into the shapes. And three-dimensional, and now they're solids. Because Saturn is, of course, a topic we've delved into many times. It's the force of measurements and constraints that enable form. It's what gives you the order out of chaos. Without Saturn, without the necessary evil, man could not exist. Without the skull, a dead skull encapsulating the mind, you wouldn't have the form necessary and the constraint necessary to have thoughts. Now, Plato's cave, is an allegory about prisoners in a cave, and they see shadows, and they swear there's something going on outside of that cave. But they don't know. That's all they've ever known. One gets free, he goes out, and he comes back, and he's like, hey, there's a whole world outside of here. Those shadows, they were real. There's something going on out here. There's civilization. But they don't want to believe it. They're like, no, that's cool. We'll stay in this cave. Right? So here you see Greg coming out of Plato's dive. Very telling of what happens at the end. Because guess what he chooses to do? He chooses to stay in the cave. Plot spoiler alert. Excuse me. So they're back in the simulation world and they look to find Kendo, the drug dealer. And, you know, he confirms that this isn't just some fantasy stuff. He calls her, Isabel, Dr. Kendall, proving she's really a doctor. And she's like, give me the blues. And she shoots him, and Greg's like, what is happening? Is this real or fake? And she's like, no, he's fine. This is a fake world. And you see the diamond stencils all over the place. Those are the platonic solids. We now know that these are platonic solids. These are the formation of the simulation world, the material world. The evil world, according to the Gnostics. The cops, they surround the Stevie Nicks homeless tent here. And Greg and Isabel, they look at each other. They've only got enough blues for one of them to make it back to the Golden Age. And Greg's like, why don't you smash my skull in with a rock? And I'll just go back to the real world that way. But Isabel's like, hey, I don't really know if that works. And he's like, damn it, okay. And she starts lamenting. She's like, I lament this world that I created. Because again, she's the Gnostic Sophia. But Greg, he sees it differently. He has a change of heart. He appreciates it. He's like, I love how unpredictable and chaotic this world is. One moment I'm starving. The next the cops are chasing me. It's great. Wow, it's really great. You thought I had a bad Nick Cage. I got a terrible Owen Wilson, okay? Then he says, look, I'm not leaving. You snort the blue pills, and you get out of here, and I'll just stay.
This is horrible. This is a fucking nightmare. It's my fault. I created this shit. This is me.
Kind of beautiful.
It is.
Because even with the cops coming with us running and just, you know, everyone's playing their part and we're all like, we never know how it's gonna end. 1 minute we're roller skating and laughing, remember? Yeah, and then the next minute can't even afford a sandwich, and then the next minute you never know. That's what I love about here and what you created. You don't know what's gonna happen. Up. And it's great. And I'm not leaving.
Well, she stays. And we don't really clearly see what happens. I'm sorry, Greg stays. She snorts the pills, but we don't really see what happens. We don't really know. Did she die? Did she really evacuate the Matrix? Greg sees it, but we're not sure what happens. So Greg takes off. He heads over to the Safe Harbor Rehab Clinic, again, the lighthouse. He tells the group, like, he's got a photo of his daughter, of Emily. And he's like, look, this is the girl. She is my daughter, and she says she's my daughter. I believe it. Meaning he's choosing the simulation world, the ugly world. It's kind of like love is the bond here, like Interstellar. When we talked about the Interstellar film analysis, love connects through the quantum five-dimensional reality. The film ends, but then it kind of doesn't. It shows the sky. It zooms down onto the park bench. There's Emily, the daughter. Greg's walking towards her. She's like, hey, Dad, don't feel bad. You're not late. You're here. And it's like he revisited the ugly world. He was a one percenter in the Golden Age, but he's coming back in the simulation for a reminder of what the ugly world feels like so he can appreciate the golden age world. And one last photo for you to take a look at on the Instagram there. You'll see Greg, he's the Saturnian force next to the building with several platonic solid symbols on it. There's no other reason for those symbols to be on this building. It's symbolic of the platonic solids of the evil world, the building blocks of the evil world. So in conclusion, what is going on in this crazy film? Well, there's lots of questions that remain unanswered. Why not just choose the elevated world, the golden age? Why come back and visit the dirty world? How did asteroid mining create enough funds to make this elevated world? Are they talking about a communism, universal basic income? Is that what Doc Henry starts giving out? How? We don't know. What's up with the Pleiades? Well, let's look to Blavatsky here because this is very curious, this connection. These Pleiades are, she says, these Pleiades are the most occult connections that exist. They are very occult because they are connected with all the Rishis too. They have an interchange of thought with the Rishis. That's from H.P. Blavatsky's The Secret Doctrine Dialogues. So the Pleiades are the most occult constellations, and that's why they're in this film. Because the turtle is the world creator, right? And then plays a role in, as Doc Harris. Doc Harris, the guy who mined the asteroid, is the turtle. He's the nerd that created this golden age. And because Blavatsky's writings are a little bit odd to me, I mean, you can read about the turtles in The Secret Doctrine. It doesn't make a ton of sense. I found an explanation on BlavatskyTheosophy.com, an article about the Pleiades. And listen to this. I'm going to read you from it. It might firstly be useful to explain that there's a constellation called Ursa Major, also known as the Great Bear, the Big Dipper, and the Plow. In India, it is referred to as the Saptarishi, which means seven rishis. The Sanskrit term Rishi meaning a sage or saint. It consists of seven bright stars. These Saptarishi have a connection, both in Hindu mythology and in esotericism, with the Pleiades. The Pleiades, known as the Seven Sisters, is a star cluster located in the constellation of Taurus, and although having several thousand stars that are said to be six of particular brightness and a seventh which is hidden or not visible to physical sight. In The Secret Doctrine, H.P. Blavatsky and her adept teachers explain, as to the mysterious constellation of the seven rishis and the Great Bear, if Egypt made them sacred to the oldest genetrix, Typhon, India has connected all these symbols ages ago with time or Yuga revolutions, and the Saptarishis are intimately connected with our present age, the dark Kali Yuga. She goes on to say that the Bhagavad Purana scripture, also called the Srimad Bhagavatam, the Great Circle of Time, is represented as a tortoise, and across its loins the seven rishis. What do we make of all this nonsense? Well, the Great Bear is talking about cycles of time. The Kali Yuga is the cycle of time that we're currently in, the Dark Age. We talked about this with my QAnon shows, talking about Steve Bannon, how he was trying to usher in the new golden age for the elites by bringing an end to the Kali Yuga, the Dark Age. Curious enough, Blavatsky mentions Typhon, which is what that Mark of the Beast ONX summons. So maybe that does have a larger role than what I previously thought. But you got to look at the history of Gnosticism and the ideas they've presented. Wisdom, Sophia. Sophia creates the Yaldabaoth. The divine mother and the false god Yaldabaoth. They both know the real god, the invisible spirit in the Palermo. And you know, then you've got like the Barbello, this is the universal womb, this is the first woman. And you can go deep into this as deep as you want, but Sophia, she is the female and the one that created this simulation world, the ugly world, the lower creation. out of an accident. She was a perfected pair, but she didn't consult with her male consort, Naughty Naughty, and she created this accidental Yaldabaoth fake god. So what is Greg? What's his role? Obviously, Isabel is Sophia. Greg is, he could be the force of Saturn, right? Because you see him with the platonic solids. We also know he's obsessed with Pleiades. You see the turtle throughout because it represents the great circle of time as per Helena Blavatsky. Again, a possible Saturnian reference of time and measurement. That's why Saturn was called Kronos and you've got watches called Kronos. You got the Pleiades, the seven Rishis. They were sacred to the Egyptians as Typhon, the god of the underworld. In India, they connected these symbols to the cycles of time, and they talked about the Dark Age of Kali Yuga. Well, that's the one with the ugly world that Sophia or Isabel created. And the next cycle after the Kali Yuga is the Golden Age, which is what Isabel shows Greg in the movie. In some ways, Greg is like the Christ character. He's visiting this ugly world of platonic solids via the lighthouse path, as Christ said he was the light. Or maybe he's just tripping off the hydrocodone, right? Maybe it's just drug abuse that wrecked his life and he made the whole story up. Because it is curious that the prescription numbers play a role in the storyline. And they also show up in the blue crystal safe. But given the turtles, given the Pleiades, I would say that when Blavatsky says the Pleiades are the most occult star system, that's what we're witnessing. An occult symbolism tale. And if you look at the poster for Bliss, it shows the duality of the homeless versions of Greg and Isabel versus the polished up ones. And it says, chase something real. Because to them, we live in a simulation. And they want to try to break us free from it. Or at least themselves, so that they can live in the Golden Age. So there you go. That's the movie Bliss. Full of occult symbolism. If you want more on the Gnostic ideas, listen to my show. I interviewed Marisa Acacella. And on that show, I talk about a giveaway on March 1st, 2021. Be a supporter on one of my supporter feeds, and you can get in on that. But listen to that show about Marisa Acacella to learn more about the details on the giveaway. We've got more on Gnosticism coming up real soon. We're going to talk a lot about simulation theory and all these ideas. So until next time, my friend, you know what to do. Stay woke.